Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, I am excited about today's podcast.
Yeah, I agree, Robin. Very excited to talk to this individual. He's going to talk about his journey, and I think it's going to be helpful for our listeners as they go through their life journey. So I'm eager and excited to jump in and hear about it.
Well, this is going to be the first time that I'm not only introducing a CEO, but a chief explorer. That's a new one for me, and I'm very excited about that. So no further ado, joining us today is Mike Bursick, CEO and Chief Explorer of Wayfinders. Okay, Mike, so you run a really cool company. And from what I can tell, we were chatting before the podcast, it seems to be a pretty cool life too. So can you tell us, just to get us started, about the company?
Yeah, I mean, my shorthand for what I do with Wayfinders is I take entrepreneurs to wild, faraway places and I make them cry, which is not untrue. But really, I host events in really remote, wild places like Mongolia or Papua New Guinea. And they're equal parts adventure, community, and personal development for my members or entrepreneurs. And one of the reasons I do it in these wild remote places is I try to take them as far away from their day-to-day context and put them in very different situations, expose them to very different cultures, very different experiences that help to just give them a little bit of a reset, give them an opportunity to reflect on where they're heading. Are they living, you know, a life that feels authentic to them? And also lead a local community of entrepreneurs here in Toronto that's kind of related to the adventures as well. So lots of fun.
Now, if you were to put me in touch with one of these entrepreneurs and I were to chat with them and I said about the comment about you take them to these faraway places and make them cry, would they feel good about that? I'm assuming that getting to that point and having that cry and having that release, I'm getting the sense that that's probably a good thing and that they probably say, yes, that was a great experience in life, but maybe I'm wrong.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I don't want to overstate it. It's not like a big tear fest. It's just, you know, that's shorthand for I create an environment. I go to great lengths to create an environment that feels very safe and welcoming where people can just drop the armor and they can be completely themselves and they can be authentic and they can be vulnerable. And when you create an environment like that and people open up, sometimes tears come out, right? And my experience has been everybody struggling with something at any given point, or they're struggling with something, you know, that happened in the past that they haven't quite processed yet. And when I create a space for them to just open up and talk about it and be in a place where they feel supported and they're not going to be judged, then sometimes things get emotional. I also make sure that we're not always in those tough, heavy places, that there's a lot of joy and there's a lot of dancing and laughter and just goofing around and that kind of stuff as well. But I also want to make sure, because I've been in a lot of places where with a lot of successful people, entrepreneurs, whatever, where everybody's kind of walking around puffing out their chest and pretending like everything is amazing.
Yeah.
When I know that some of the most successful people on the outside have the deepest struggles internally. And often a lot of these people have nowhere to turn to talk about those things, right? Particularly, like, let's say you're the founder CEO of a public company or a company that's taken VC funding, you kind of feel this pressure to just show that everything's amazing. You're just crushing it. Particularly if you have investors, you have this fear that you don't want your investors knowing that you're struggling with your mental health or with your at home and your relationship or whatever. But that's just a part of being human. And particularly the bigger the company, the bigger the challenges. And so for people to have places where they can just open up about that stuff is, I've found people really welcome that. And it's very important for them to have those places.
Mike, I know one of the things that you wanted to talk about was an influential study by Julianne Holt Lundstad, which I understand talked about isolation as a key contributor to mortality. And I'm sure coming out of COVID, that's become a bigger talking point. Can you tell us a little bit more about the study itself, what it showed, and how we might use that information in our day-to-day lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll start off by giving you a little bit of context. A big part of why I started this company, why I started Wayfinders, was I've been an entrepreneur for 27 years, and entrepreneurship can be an extremely lonely journey, right? When you're sort of the person at the top, you might not feel that space to be able to open up to your staff and be authentic and vulnerable. And maybe your close friends, they all work corporate jobs or whatever, and you don't feel like they can relate. So just this morning, I was leading, we have these Friday morning entrepreneur walks, and there was, I think, six or seven of us that went for a walk on the beaches here. There was a few new people there, and I was just overhearing them talking about how grateful they are to be able to connect with other entrepreneurs because they feel it's such a lonely journey. So that's a big reason why I started this, was to create places where people, I went to a lot of entrepreneur conferences that were really heavy on information, like, you know, great speakers and great workshops and stuff like that, but it was a fire hose of information. And what I found the real value in those places was the connections I could form. So I wanted to create something that started with connection first. And so I've spent a lot of time over the last 7 years since I started this company, really diving into the science and the research around isolation and loneliness. So this study, it was a meta study, I think 300,000 people around the world studying risk factors for mortality. And the usual suspects were on there, like smoking, lack of exercise. But actually the two top factors contributing to longevity or to mortality, if they're lacking, number two was the strength and quality of your intimate relationships, you know, your partner, your kids, your parents, stuff like that. But number one, surprisingly, was the strength and quantity of what they called weak ties. So do you have connections with your neighbors? Do you say hi to the local crossing guard? Do you go to your local butcher and have a conversation with them? And what they found was these little micro moments of connection throughout your day, if you live in that type of context, whether it's your colleagues or, you know, whatever, actually were the biggest contributor to your sense of well-being, to your sense of having people who look out for you, that kind of thing. And so for me, the way that influences how I live my life is I'm always looking to how can I create more moments of connection throughout my day, throughout my week. And so for me, you know, being an entrepreneur, I've just found it easier to just do that myself rather than looking for opportunities. So I'm always creating opportunities, not just for me to connect, but for other people to connect as well, knowing that that's going to contribute to my health. It's going to contribute to my sense of well-being. It's going to help me live a longer life. So to give you one specific example, I still shop at the local, you know, supermarket, but I also try and make sure, like, there's an amazing butcher 10-minute bike ride away from me, Gasparo's on Bloor Street. And every time I go in there, it's like the brothers are super gregarious. And it's like a little party in there, the customers and the guys and whatever, and everybody's laughing it up. And it's just such a rewarding experience to go there shopping for my food than a very impersonal grocery store where, you know, I might end up doing self-checkout and not interacting with a single human being there. So I'm always looking for these little moments because I know they're rewarding, they make me feel good, and they contribute to the type of world that I want to live in.
So Mike, I want to dive a little bit deeper in there, and maybe you can just give us some of your thoughts. In terms of those connections, I'm going to assume quality over quantity, but how do we build those? Like, how do we know what to look for? How do we know if something's missing? And how do we build those strong connections that are going to make us live longer and feel better about ourselves?
I think it starts with an understanding of the importance of that, because, you know, in our busy lives, it can become easy to kind of write that off and focus on work and, you know, focus on your kid or whatever that may be. And it's like, okay, well, if there's a little bit of free time left over there, then, you know, I'll go meet up with a friend or I'll go play volleyball or whatever. I approach it very differently, where that is probably my top priority, really, is to ensure I'm living a life that's rich with connection. And for me, it also has a very strong business payoff. If I'm investing in my relationship, particularly relationships with other entrepreneurs, they tend to get curious about what I do and take an interest in it. And for me, that's probably my number one source of new members, of people going on my ventures, just face-to-face interactions with people. And I think that's true for a lot of businesses, is people want to do business with people they trust. And you develop that trust through face-to-face or even Zoom calls or whatever that may be. But it's just an understanding that this is important. It shouldn't be an afterthought. So I'm extremely intentional about it. I'll give you an example of just sort of a walkthrough of how I approach it. It starts with, I have a 2-hour chunk in my calendar that's blocked off for just planning and visioning and whatever, and just my connection. So I'm looking at, like, what are the personal social interactions I want to have? What are the professional interactions that I want to have? And I map that out. I have a database. I have an Airtable database. It's about 350 people in it, people that I want to stay connected with that I've met briefly, or sometimes they're intimate connections. And I just periodically look through that and, like, who do I want to connect with? And then, because this can get very overwhelming pretty quickly, I try to introduce efficiency as much as I can. And so every week I'll flag some people that I want to connect with. And then my assistant will reach out to them and say, you know, Michael would love to connect with you. And I have links for, you know, meeting up over a phone call, meeting up over a coffee, or meeting up over lunch. So obviously that can seem like a little bit impersonal or whatever to have my assistant reaching out to people. But the way I express it to people is, like, I want to spend my time being present and connecting with you. I don't want to spend my time, like, figuring out the logistics of meeting together. And then I also, part of that time is, like, what are some of the events or opportunities that I want to host for people to get together? So, like I said, I have this Friday morning walking thing. I have these monthly Soul Talks online events. I have these Taco Talks dinners that I host at my home. And so I'm just constantly looking for opportunities to bring people together. It's very rewarding for me. It's very rewarding for them. And also happens to work out very well professionally. So it really just starts with the attention and prioritizing it, because I've found, both for myself and for other people, it can become an afterthought. And knowing what I know about how important connection is in a human life, our brains are wired for it, right? We evolved as very social creatures. And if we rewind 10,000 years, if you were not connected to a group of people, you would generally not survive. And so our whole neurochemistry evolved for human connection. When we lack it, our brain systems go haywire, right? And so we know that loneliness and isolation is a massive contributor to depression, and the knock-on effects of that and how effects of physiology are massive. So it starts with making it a priority. And then I take it to the extreme with all the stuff that I've outlined for you, but it could just be, you know, have a list of friends that you want to stay connected with. The other tip I would offer is, particularly in a Western context, there are, you know, all sorts of cultures and societies where it just happens naturally. If you live in a village in rural Africa, you're just constantly in contact and touch with those people around you. You don't have to do a lot of work. It just happens every day. But in our context, generally it does require some work. And one of the things I've been exploring is just lots of recurring things, like these Friday walks. I have a Wednesday morning coffee thing with a bunch of people that I want to stay connected with. And in the past, it was like constantly reaching out, like, hey, let's grab coffee this week. Let's do this. Let's do that. And it's a lot of work having to do that every week or every month. And now it's just like, hey, Wednesday morning, I go to this coffee shop in Kensington Market. And if you want to drop in and say hi, then come in and say hi. So just looking at opportunities like that, just to increase the connection.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head with a couple of things you said there. You know, we get busy in our lives, right? And unless you make it a priority, which it sounds like you're doing, this is one of those things that can easily fall by the wayside.
As Al said, you said a ton of stuff there. There's so much in there. As you were speaking, I'm going, oh my God, that's me. Yes. Oh, that resonates with me. I love that. And there's a couple of things I want to go back to. One was, we were talking about loneliness and how it affects mortality. And I remember one of the saddest stories I heard through the pandemic was about this young girl who had moved to Toronto from Asia. And she was so excited because she had moved into a tech firm. And of course, you know, for young people, everything's at the office. There's ping pong, there's going out for drinks and hanging out. And then of course the pandemic hits and she's stuck in her little box in Toronto, in her condo, saying basically you can't go anywhere. And she ended up taking her own life. And it was one of the saddest stories. And I thought how lonely she must have felt to get to that point. You know, she had left her family back in Asia and had no one here because the office had just been shut down and all of a sudden you couldn't go anywhere. And when the pandemic hit, I was working remotely, quite remotely. And I remember thinking, hey, this is great. I don't have to go into the office. I can work. But I did find that loneliness was setting in. The only person that I got to talk to was my wife. And while that's wonderful, I started missing those things. And one of the reasons we started the podcast was, okay, we're in this space where we're not seeing people as much anymore. At least digitally, we can talk to people. And one of the very nice surprises, and I think Al would concur on this, is we were able to develop relationships really well in the digital space. We got to know people that we liked, respected, trusted. And ultimately, when things did open up and we can go out and meet people, as we're going to with you at some point, we didn't skip a beat. Those relationships were real. And that's one of the things that's happened with the podcast that I'd love to pick your brain a little bit after the podcast, because we've built this community of amazing people. You know, some of my best friends, Mike Clark, Joshua Siegel, I've met through the podcast. And it's been wonderful to meet these people in person and continue to deepen that relationship. But you also started talking about these events that you host. And, you know, we've done dinners with our clients. We have not done journeys across to Mongolia like you have. But Al and I are...
Maybe we'll get there.
Maybe. We're in the very preliminary stages of starting to say, hey, we've met all these amazing people. We've done 200 episodes. We've got to the point where we're just meeting consistently, like we did with you, great people after great people. How do we bring these people together? And when I'm thinking about that, because I've been to events like you, great information, not a lot of connection. And I've also been on the other ones where I have had that emotional response. And those are the ones that you really feel and you remember. So if, whether it's Al or I and our team, or it's people that are listening, what are some of the tips that they should be thinking about to create that meaning and impact and make it valuable for people?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I will say there's no substitute for in-person face-to-face interaction, and people are really craving it these days. That said, you can also create really meaningful experiences for people online as well. And so I host this monthly Soul Talk series, and it's just about, I call it Soulful Conversations About the Soul. And this idea of soul being what it means to live an authentic life beneath all the messages we've been told and internalized about who we should be, how we should be, what we should be. And so I just did that this week. There was 20 people or something like that on the call. And a lot of it occurred in the breakout rooms. I put people in small groups and I would give them a prompt to discuss. Usually they would reflect on it, do a little bit of journaling, and then send them in the breakout room. And then at the conclusion of the call, I just asked people if they wanted to share any final words. And a few people just said, you know, thank you so much. This is just such a wonderful opportunity to connect with some beautiful people and have some meaningful, in-depth conversations beyond just the usual kind of chit-chat. And so that can occur online. It can happen in person, of course. What I have found, the best way to get people to connect is through the power of storytelling and invite people to share stories. And what I found is also sharing stories about childhood, you know, about their formative experiences. It gives you a window into another person's life. It invites to deeper openness and deeper vulnerability than a typical conversation. And I'll give you one example. It's not necessarily about childhood, but just about storytelling. So one of the things I do with a lot of my international events is I ask people on the packing list is bring a small item with personal significance for you. We do a lot of crazy outdoor adventures and fun stuff, but we do a lot of gathering together in a group, typically in a circle, just sharing time, or we do group exercises. One of the first things we do when we gather the group in a circle is we do this storytelling thing. We put a table in the center of the circle and we go around the room and we ask people to tell a story about the object and why they brought that object and why it has significance for them. And inevitably, like, the stories span the breadth of human experience. But inevitably, there's some like really beautiful, deep stories people will share. You know, this was given to me by my dad, you know, last year, just before he passed, or this was given to me by my child. You know, she was wishing me well on this trip to Mongolia or whatever. Often people get emotional, there are tears, and you can feel it. And often I get a lot of returning people, but sometimes there's a lot of new people, and you can just feel the energy in the room shift. And there's just this incredible moment of connection, and people are sharing these vulnerable stories, and you can look around the room and you can see people resonating, connecting with that story, because inevitably there's only a few stories of the human experience, loss, love, those kinds of stories. And if somebody shares a story of a ring that was given to them by their father before he passed, well, maybe the other person, their father, is still alive, but somebody they know has passed and they can relate with that feeling of loss and that feeling of longing. And so storytelling, really, is just such an amazing, and this is something that I did in my previous company where I ran a larger team. During our weekly huddles, there was time for storytelling in there, and it just brings people together to share human stories.
You just brought up some memories for me that are giving me chills and goosebumps, because couple of years ago, my brother passed away at the age of 59, and he was the family historian. And whenever I would ask him about something or someone, he had this great story. He had the ability, and he'd tell this story. So you felt like you got to know the place, you got to know the person. And when Lawrence passed away, I thought, wow, the family history just disappeared. And the only person left besides me and my sister was my mom. And I thought, I'm going to hop on, you know, this platform. We actually recorded on this platform. And I wanted to hear more about mom's childhood because I thought I knew the story, Mike, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't. And I grew up and I feel very fortunate. Mom's still around. She's approaching 83 and she's the nicest lady you could ever meet. And of course, everyone's going to be biased and say that about her mom, but I truly feel that way. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, but I had a blessed childhood because I felt loved. I felt very lucky to have parents, and especially my mom. I was very close to my mom. And when I started asking her about her childhood growing up in England during the war, and the fact that she didn't know happiness as a child, she had fear, she didn't know if she was going to live beyond a certain point. In a way, it was almost depressing, but then in a way, I was like, wow, what an amazing person to come from a place where she didn't know love, didn't know happiness, and to become such a loving mother. It was just so incredible to capture that story. And now I've got it forever, right?
Beautiful.
So I agree, you know, that power of storytelling. And I will tell you, during that same conversation, I got her talking about each of her grandchildren so that eventually one day when mom is no longer there, I'm going to share that story with each of the grandkids so that they have it. So it was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And that's beautiful. And I'm sorry to hear about your brother. My mom's 81 as well. Similar kind of story. And it's been very much on my mind to do the same thing, to record that specifically for my kids as well, so that she's close with them, so that they have something tangible that they can remember her by. And also because my mom keeps her cards close to her chest and she's a little bit reticent to open up. But I think through that medium of just tell your story and we'll record it might get her to open up a little bit. And that's also something that I want to do for my children. It's just share my story and something that they can hold on to after I'm gone as well. And I think it's just a beautiful way to capture stories, capture memories, and share them with the people that are close to you through that power of storytelling.
Mike, I want to shift things maybe to the workplace a little bit, and I'll tell a little bit of a story before we jump in. So a couple of years ago, myself, Robin, and our other business partner, Joe, were sitting in the boardroom, and we asked some questions to one another around, again, some of the backstory. And we asked some pretty personal questions. And I do remember, Robin, I think you said in that one moment, you probably felt like you knew us better or you learned some things that you didn't know before. So I think that was a really valuable exercise for us. So my question to you, Mike, is how can we bring more of that human connection into the workplace? And it's not just the three business partners, but the whole team. How can we bring those connections into the workplace and why does it matter?
Yeah. Well, I'll answer the last part of that question, why it matters. So Google, being, you know, a decent sized company with some resources, a few years ago, really wanted to understand what made for productive teams. And they did this massive study over several years called Project Aristotle. And what they found was the single most important factor contributing to a team's productivity and efficiency and valuable output was psychological safety. That simply means, can I show up and be myself in the workplace? Can I express myself without fear of judgment or ridicule or being shut down? And the reason that's so important is if you're working on an important project, you want everybody's input. You want different perspectives to be there. You want to be able to analyze a problem from different perspectives. And if there isn't psychological safety, there's going to be a lot of voices that are silenced, that don't feel that they can speak up because they're worried that they're going to get shut down, they're going to get made fun of, whatever that may be. And so then you're losing a lot of valuable perspective. And when people don't feel that psychological safety and they don't feel belonging in the workplace, they don't feel a sense of connection to their work. And so what I've found and what the research shows is that when you can create psychological safety and when you can create a sense of belonging in the workplace, your employees, they're just going to go so much farther for you and they're going to feel a deeper connection to their work. And if you can create a workplace where people show up and they feel like they belong and they feel like they have connections there, that's so valuable because our workplace is where we spend the majority of our waking hours, right? And so if I think about my previous company and my employees, I spent way more time with them than I did with my partner or with my kids. So I wanted to make that time valuable. I didn't want us to just be heads down working all the time. I wanted us to feel a sense of connection. So again, I'll bring us back to the power of storytelling. And basically, in a nutshell, create opportunities for people to bring their human selves to work and share their stories. And when people share their stories, they connect with each other. And you see somebody as a human first and as a colleague second. And then you connect with that. And then you're far less likely to butt heads with them if you understand a little bit about, particularly if like people can shape stories that give you a window into how they became who they are. One of the best questions I love to ask during my events, what is a moment or what is a period in your life that defined who you are today? That question can often lead to some very deep, open, vulnerable places. And I tend to try and create a little bit of psychological safety and connection before I spring that question on people, right? And so that's like that first storytelling exercise I told you with the significant object. Typically in my events, there's usually around 24 to 26 people there. And so sometimes we meet as a large group, sometimes we split into two with my co-facilitator, but a lot of the magic happens in these small four-person groups. Often one of the first things we do is we'll put them in these groups and we'll say, share a story about a moment or a period in your life that defined you. And usually it's the most challenging times in our lives that we feel define who we are today. And they'll share these incredible stories. And because I take part in this exercise, you know, I'm privy to a lot of these stories, and there's just an instant sense of connection with people there. And you see the human behind the facade. You see how they became who they are, how they make the decisions that they make. And so if you think about a workplace where there's a lot of collaboration, where there can be a lot of friction, when you understand what's driving somebody, then their decisions make sense. And so if somebody is acting in a way that you might think is irrational or whatever, if you understand a little bit about them as a human, you have more compassion and more empathy for how they are that way. And you're less likely to want to butt heads with them. There's a two-way empathy, two-way connection, two-way compassion there, right? And so in the busy workplace, it can feel like very frivolous for people to just hang out and share stories or connect or whatever. But the research shows that that is extremely important, right? So why not spend time on that and help people connect? It doesn't just have to be sharing vulnerable stories. It could just some sort of team bonding experience. But we need to, as leaders, stop seeing that as a frivolous thing and seeing as a very vital contributor to productivity, to wellness, all these different things, right? And so again, I'll bring it back to the first point. If people feel a sense of belonging in the workplace, they're going to want to contribute more. They're going to get more meaning from their work. They're going to want to stay longer. Your retention will be higher, all these different things, right? For me, I think it's probably the most vital thing you can do as a leader is create that in the workplace.
We at our company try to meet 3 to 4 times a year with the team and do some of these exercises. We have one coming up in October. I was wondering what we should be doing for the agenda. I think you just gave me the answer. Thank you.
Great. Feel free to hit me up for more ideas.
All right. Wonderful.
Yeah. I will remember we had lunch last summer with Christine Song, who is very well known in the Toronto tech industry. And sitting down with Christine is you just sit there and say, okay, let me have it. Because she's always got such great things to say. And one of the things she had said to us was, I love the podcast. I love what you guys are doing. The only piece of advice I can give you is try to get to know the person behind the role. And I think what I really appreciate about you, Mike, and I think our audience will, is we got to see who the real person is, not just the role, not just the leader of the company. So I really appreciate that you did that. I think you've answered Al's signature question already, but we're going to ask you just in case you have another answer, because
I'm sure I can give you other perspectives on it.
Yeah. You've said so many great things, and I look forward to continuing this relationship and, dare I say, friendship that we're starting to build here. I really do look forward to that. But Al, I'll let you take it away with your signature question.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you are planting?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful question and a beautiful perspective. And it reminds me, like, I'm blessed to travel all over the world, and I'm blessed to spend time in the company of people from, you know, very traditional cultures. And a lot of indigenous cultures around the world talk about this idea of 7 generations planting a tree that won't bear fruit for, metaphorically, for 7 generations. And what a different perspective from focusing on next quarter results and stuff like that. It's like, how can we think ahead? And I certainly like to think about that in terms of my life and my work and what is the legacy. And really, what I would love for my legacy to be is just that I help to create more connection in the world. And that's what drives me every day. And it also has the beautiful benefit of creating more connection in my life. So it is both a selfless and a selfish act at the same time. And, you know, every time I hear a story of somebody sharing like an event I hosted, whether it's in Mongolia or just a dinner I hosted or whatever, and that a lifelong friendship resulted from that, it's truly heartwarming to think that I contributed to that. And so it's work that I'm really leaning into, and how can I have more impact and create more connection in the world, but not lose the intimacy of that, right? I don't want to build something that is creating millions of connections, but they're just like weak online connections. I want to create deep connections for as many people as I can without compromising the quality of that. So, I mean, I guess, you know, that is a tree whose shade I am sitting in, but it is also a tree that I think will be providing shade for people for many years to come. And also, if I think about the ripple impacts of that, of people feeling more connected, the impact it has on their kids, the people in their network, it feels very rich for me.
Yeah, Mike, I appreciate that. And it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm glad that you were able to join us today. And I look forward to our next conversation.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your amazing journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Wayfinders?
Wayfinders is at way-finders.com. And also my Instagram is probably, I'm not as active as I should be on LinkedIn. Instagram is probably a better place where I just, you know, post a lot about what I'm up to, the public events I'm running. So it's instagram.com/MikeBursick, B-R-C-I-C.
All right, perfect. You're going to get a new follow today from me. So, well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or rejoining the conversation on LinkedIn. And as we've seen here today, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.